The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So, good morning, everyone. Can you hear me all right? Is it loud enough for everyone? It is, of course, a strange question. Because if you don't hear it, you won't answer it. So I trust it's loud enough. Happy to be here with you. And I just come back from having taught a retreat at Spirit Rock, which was still feels like it's part of me. And before that, had gone on a kind of a three-day retreat that I will talk about in a few minutes. So a little bit louder. I think it needs to be louder. So let's see. Is it loud enough now? Is it coming along? There are hearing system devices that some people use just on the counter in just the other room. But it seems like, is it loud? Or should we do it a little bit louder? No? A little bit? Maybe just a little bit? That when I taught at Spirit Rock, they did something which was unusual for me, was they had the speaker systems on really loud. And it was kind of surprising, but as my hearing is, you know, getting weaker, and I've kind of discovered that I didn't realize how hard I was trying to listen when my hearing was going. I thought it was just normal or something. And now with hearing system devices and these loudspeakers at Spirit Rock, I said, oh, look at that, Gil. You know, this is more relaxed now, even though it seems too loud. So anyway, it's always a work in progress, figuring this out. So, a story. There was a claimed Buddhist monastery where many hundreds of people came to be monastics, monks and nuns. And there were always, you know, a group of new monastics that came every year. And the first year in a monastery is often challenging. Just getting used to the lifestyle, getting used to the schedule, getting up very early in the morning. A lot of meditation, a lot of work, a lot of being in community, a lot of silence. It's all this stuff that, and if you're a new monastic, you're kind of like at the bottom of the totem pole of certain kind of seniority. So sometimes some of the more challenging jobs are given to you. So at some point during the year, the abbess invited all the new monastics to go on a pilgrimage. And they were like so relieved. Wow, fantastic, a pilgrimage. And we were told we're going on the pilgrimage to the sacred Buddhist sites. Wow. Yeah, the Buddha talked about the value of going and visiting where the Buddha was born, where he was enlightened, where he first taught, and where he died. They're considered to be the four most sacred sites for at least our kind of Buddhism. And so maybe we'll go on a plane and we'll go off and it'll be great to go on a pilgrimage to the holy sites. So they all got ready and were ready there was a couple of like fancy tour buses that came and picked them up at the monastery gates, and they didn't know where they were going. And they first went to a hospital. And the abbess led him through the halls and the rooms of the hospital and through the emergency room and all the different places. And they saw people on all kinds of levels and kinds of sicknesses and illnesses and injuries. And so that was kind of, some of them had never really been in a hospital that much. And so then they finished and they got back on their tour buses. And they went on to the next step of their pilgrimage, and they went to a hospice. And there they saw people who were all kinds of stages of dying. From there they went to an old age home and they saw all the different stages of getting old and what that means to the mind, to the heart sometimes, to the body, all kinds of, wow, there's a lot of ways of being old. And then they got back on the tour buses and the buses took them back to the monastery. And there they went to the hospice in the monastery where there was an old monk, one of the oldest in the monastery, who was there in the hospice in his last days. And they went to see him, and he didn't have much to say or anything to say, but there was this wonderful sparkle in his eyes, delight. Didn't seem like it depended on seeing them, his sparkle. It's just like he just had this sparkle. And he was very peaceful, very calm. This feeling of deep kind of tranquility just to be with him. And then the abbess took them to a meeting room in the monastery. And she said, now you've seen the four holy sights of Buddhism. Sickness, old age, death, and a practitioner who's found deep abiding peace. So rather than being a place to go, the holy sites were human conditions. And there's something about the encounter with human conditions in an honest, direct way, which does something to Buddhists. They're holy sites. How could that be? How could a hospital be a holy site? A hospice, an old age home. How could this be? And I think a little bit the answer is in that fourth holy site, a practitioner who's found their peace, a practitioner who's able to die with a sparkle, with the delight, with joy and peace, and all the conditions of life have been settled. And to honestly and fully encounter this human condition of ours, not pretend it's differently, not to run away, not kind of touch into some of these existential conditions that will visit all of us if we're lucky enough, and kind of skirt around them and avoid them. Buddha says, stop and take a good look. Stop and really be present. Practice with that. Let that be a mirror to see yourself, to see your reactions, your fears, your activities, your distractions, your preoccupations. Because this Buddhist practice is here to meet, help us, support us through the biggest, deepest, most challenging experiences any person can have in their human life. This is not a hobby, what we do in Buddhism. It's not, you know, an excursion on a tour bus to Disneyland just to kind of have an, you know, wonderful Disneyland-like spiritual experiences. So to the holy sites of Buddhism, a pilgrimage is a journey to a sacred place. That's like, if you go in the dictionary, that's one of the first meanings you have for it. The word pilgrim and pilgrimage, it turns out that it's closely related etymologically, from the same source, Latin source, as the word peregrine, the bird, the peregrine falcon. Isn't that pretty cool? A peregrine falcon. I just kind of, you know, when they're soaring high up in the sky, traveling long distances, there's this kind of freedom there. In the Buddhism, there's this idea that birds, when they fly through the sky, leave no traces. There's no tracks left behind. And that's held up as kind of an ideal, that when you go through life, like when you're backpacking, this is the ideal, leave no traces. In Buddhism, there's this ideal that go through life and don't leave any traces. And they don't mean like don't go through life so no one ever remembers you when you die or anything. But don't leave anything sticky. Don't leave anything undone or unresolved. Don't leave any karma behind. Don't leave any disturbances behind. Don't leave the world in a worse place than you found it. Leave it in a better place. Don't leave traces that way. So from the Latin root, pilgrimage means to go through the field. Apparently in Latin it kind of meant the field was abroad, like someone who comes from out away or to going abroad or coming from abroad. So it doesn't mean that much, the etymology, but journeying to a holy place. And I've known people who've gone on pilgrimages, long pilgrimages. I've met people on pilgrimage. And classically, people do it for many reasons. And sometimes they do it because their life is falling apart. I've known people who they've lost something very important about their life and they felt lost, didn't know what to do. And so it wasn't like they were going to a pilgrimage, to a place, a sacred place, to get to the place. They were going because they needed to kind of regroup or rediscover who they are or question their life and reflect on what their life is about. And then also to be open to new experiences. Some of the great pilgrimage routes in the world, there's a lot of pilgrims, and so you never know who you're going to meet on the route and what you're going to encounter, what you're going to struggle with, what you're dealing with. Classically, a pilgrim travels with very little. He's kind of lives a life that's close to poverty. staying in hostels, perhaps. There's pilgrim hostels in some hostels in some places, and I've stayed in some, and one of them, I would suspect there were probably 200 people in the room, men, women, and everything else, and all sleeping under the same roof, and the same kind of room. There were some dividing wall, kind of partial walls, so it wasn't like you saw everyone at the same time, but you heard everyone at the same time. And it was phenomenal to hear the snoring at night. Because I used to live near the ocean, and it was wonderful to hear the waves crashing at night. You tend to hear them more at night than during the day, and you hear the crashing waves, and so it's kind of comforting. Well, when you have 200 people, I don't know how many of them were snorers, but it was remarkable. I don't know if this is a common phenomenon, that they were synchronized, at least in the hostel I was in. And they were, they'd come in waves. Like they'd start up and they'd all kind of come to a crescendo together. And then they'd go down and get quiet for next hour or something, and then up again. And it became like a phenomenon of nature. It came like the waves at the beach. I wasn't disturbed by it. How could you be disturbed by waves at the beach? You mean like, wow. So it was like a natural phenomenon. And I said, so if you ever have to have a roommate in some place who snores, go on a pilgrimage first. And maybe you won't be disturbed by the snoring. Because I would just... Anyway, so you have to deal with all this stuff, you know. And what do you mean? What about privacy? And what a room with all these people? And so, and sometimes people go on meditation retreats because it's kind of like a pilgrimage for them. They don't know, they're going through some big crisis, some big issue in their life that they don't know what else to do. They're lost. They're suffering in some way. And some people come, they're not lost, but this is what they want to do. They want to go on retreat and develop their practice, deepen their meditation. But some people come because it's the only thing they know what to do in a time of great crisis. This is what comes to mind as I'm sitting here. Many years ago, there was a woman who came to a retreat I was teaching. It was in the redwoods here, deep in the redwoods. So it took a while, dirt road, to get there. And she came to the retreat, and so I asked her, "Why are you here?" "My husband made me." "And why did your husband make you come to the retreat?" Because that's kind of, to require someone to come to retreat is kind of like unusual, right? It's probably, it's counterindicated. "I had an affair." So that put the whole, that put a different context on it. So I don't know what the husband was thinking, but that's a different spousal response to an affair than many of the responses you read about in novels. Maybe you wouldn't make a good novel if, just the marital crisis ended up in a retreat. But anyway, that was kind of, to go someplace where you're kind of working through something and discovering something and confronting something in your life in an important way. And pilgrimage is often done on foot. And I've known people who don't go on a pilgrimage per se, but do these long through hikes. They go for weeks and weeks sometimes for a hike. And some of them do it because nothing else makes sense anymore. Some people do it because they have to find some other thing to value to do. Some people do it to kind of reflect on their life. I did it, well, I didn't do a long hike, but the gift that my family gave me when I turned 50 was the gift to go up in the Sierras to do a solo hike, to spend a week up in the wilderness by myself up there. And so I did. I used that occasion walking up in the Sierras by myself. It was early in the spring. It was like beginning of May. There was still snow on the ground. And as far as I could tell, I was the first one in the backcountry. So it was pretty much alone. I think I saw one person far in the distance across the valley at one point. And I reflected, now that I was 50, what do I want to do with the rest of my life? What's important for me? And that was an important reflection in time. I came back kind of, not exactly renewed, but I came back with real clarity about what I wanted to do. And it was a really, I think it was helpful to know that, to know it. And in my case, it was just keep doing what I was doing. But to have that kind of time to really look at that. So I think about three of us in this room today went on a pilgrimage 2 weeks ago. The four of us who are here right now. Amazing. There were 12 of us, and a third of them are here in this room. There have been Buddhist pilgrimages here in California in the past. I don't know if it was a pilgrimage, but one of the phenomenal Buddhist events, kind of pilgrimage kind of events, was done by I think he was American from Tennessee or Kentucky. I think he used to be like a folk singer in the 60s. But he went off to be ordained in a Chinese Buddhist monastery here in California. And learned Chinese, fluent in Chinese, and been a monk, phenomenal practitioner. His name is Reverend Heng Shur. He came to the family retreat I taught at Spirit Rock once, and he brought his guitar, and he sang a song to the kids called "Put On Your Samadhi Shoes." He was so much fun. And abbot of various temples in California, wonderful man. Well, his pilgrimage was... I think they had a temple in Los Angeles, maybe, and they have one in Ukiah. So he walked up Highway 1, maybe, I don't know, just Highway 1, but he walked certainly along Highway 1 from Southern California all the way up to Ukiah. But that's phenomenal, kind of. But what's more phenomenal was that I think he took... three steps, he would stop and he would do a full prostration on the ground. I think prostration where you're kind of completely flat on the ground. Every third step. That takes a while. That makes an impact. I don't know what he was doing in his mind. I wouldn't be surprised if he was chanting his chants or something. And he had a layperson who went along with a van. And so there was some equipment with him probably, and maybe that's how he had food. And so all he had to go have with him is his robes and his shoes and his... I don't know if he had gloves for his hands, but every time he went down. And so he wrote a book about it. I never read it, but... So that was one of the earliest kind of pilgrimages things I knew. And then from Spirit Rock, out of Spirit Rock community, there was, as it has been for many years now, a bicycle pilgrimage. And a few years ago, they started from IMC, the pilgrimage. And they've gone from here to various interesting places. Often they go to Buddhist monasteries in Northern California. So that's nice. And so 2 weeks ago, starting today, I was part of a group of about 12 people who went on a pilgrimage from Spirit Rock, walking to the Green Gulch Zen Center. The distance is not, you know, as long as pilgrimages often are, but it was meant to be a trial to kind of begin maybe a pilgrimage route, a Buddhist pilgrimage route here in California for walking. And that would go through Buddhist centers. And so there are these two. There's Spirit Rock Meditation Center in Marin County, more or less on the north side of Mount Tamalpais. And then there is on the south side of Mount Tamalpais, there is Green Gulch Zen Center, also in Marin County. And the distance that we walked was about 26 miles, I believe. And we did it over 3 days. And it was quite a wonderful event to be able to do this kind of thing. And I was actually surprised by how wonderful it was, at least for me. And so some of the details of it was that we asked Spirit Rock if we could, so we could leave early in the morning on Monday, we asked Spirit Rock if we could come and sleep in their meditation hall. Now they have two big meditation halls, so the lower one. And they said, sure. Not only that, but you're welcome to have dinner the night when you arrive on Sunday, and you're welcome to have breakfast. But just clean up after yourself. And so we showed up, and not only that, we were welcomed so warmly and ready to help set us up. And they had kind of meditation mats like this and a few futons set up for us. And so we kind of spread out. Meditation hall, some people outside the meditation hall, but different places slept. And that was kind of nice. But what was nice about it was the generosity that Spirit Rock would offer us this opportunity. And at pilgrimages where there's generosity that supports it from the community makes it kind of richer and something more heartfelt or more kind of like meaningful. Oh, not only are we doing this kind of little bit act of renunciation, you know, this going on a sacred place, but there's support for it. And so then we set off the next morning. Oh, then that evening, we were so lucky. There's a wonderful Spirit Rock teacher named Ann Cushman who came and gave us a little Dharma talk. And what I didn't know is she'd been on Buddhist pilgrimages in India. And she actually had gone to India to research it, to write a book about it. So she knew more about Buddhist pilgrimages than most people. So she kind of launched us in a wonderful celebratory way. And one of her, the mantra she gave us was, there's plenty of time. How often do you go through your life with that as your mantra? Oh, there's plenty of time. No. I think that this funny time thing, right? Many people, maybe not all of you, but many people are time poor. We live in time poverty. Everyone in the world has the same amount of time, kind of every day. If you live through the day, everyone has the same amount of time. But so it's an equal opportunity event time. But some people live it in poverty, and some people live it in abundance. And I think around here, a good percentage of people are pretty poor. I wonder if there's a direct correlation to wealth. The more wealthy you are, the more you live in time poverty. I suspect there might be something like that. But in any case, that was kind of the mantra. There's plenty of time. And we got up in the morning, and then there were someone, supporters of the pilgrimage, who showed up with their cars and trucks to take all our sleeping gear, tents and sleeping bags, and drive it to where we were going to sleep that next night. And so all we had to carry was like day packs and just lunch and food, water. And so that was nice. And then we showed up at the place where we were going to camp that night. And to our surprise, at least to my surprise, all our tents were set up. Wow. Not only did they drive everything there, so we got there, it would be all there, they set it up. And I think we also had, some of us had camping chairs, and they were set up. It was quite touching. So then we walked, after a short walk, not too far, we came to this wonderful redwood bay tree little kind of grove next to a creek. And we stopped there to have some ritual. And the ritual seemed very meaningful. All the rituals were kind of connected to the four natural elements in Buddhism: earth, water, fire, and air. So just that being in the natural setting and being connected to these elements kind of made the natural world come alive more in a nice way. But one of the very meaningful things for me in that opening was there was someone there who did this wonderful with rulers that kind of represented chronology over time, different kind of ways of using that to see something, kind of brought to life the human and geological vegetative history of where we were, and how how long our lives were up to that point, got a sense of that, and then put that in the context of how long non-indigenous humans had been in this part of California, about 200, 350 years or something, and then how long indigenous people had been in this part of California, and the age that was given was 35,000 years. So compare your lifetime to 35,000 years. Compare non-indigenous immigrants to this area in 35,000 years. It kind of creates quite a different context for this place and who was here. And so the more recent millennia was the Miwok native indigenous people. And then we did it for bay trees. Bay trees had been in that part of the country for 20 million years. Wow, we were under them, right, on these bay trees. Wow. And then we did it for redwood trees. And we looked up at the redwood trees, and they'd been there for, we were told, 200 million years. And then later in the hike, we saw a sign that said that that the redwood trees are some of the oldest and largest living creatures in the world. So 200 million years. That's a long time. And in fact, probably Redwood City, this land that we're on, maybe didn't even exist right here, because we're probably underwater. And we're still waiting for the mud to build up to create this. And not only that, but probably we were in a different location. I wouldn't be surprised if this land that we're sitting on was where Mexico City is now. Because these continental shifts and changes of everything, we've had all these different continents. I don't even know the names of all the continents that have been appeared and disappeared on this planet. The shifting, changing. So anyway, so we started with this wonderful presentation about time and who was here and all this stuff. And it kind of enriched the kind of walking we did. And then as I walked, there was a kind of like, there's plenty of time kind of mantra came up for me. And what came up for me that I repeated to myself, because it just felt so delicious. I felt so nice. Why? I was surprised how nice I felt walking. I do a lot of walking in the hills and the mountains. My wife and I, it's one of our favorite things to do. And I have no regrets of how I walk. But it was different walking on as a pilgrim. And the difference was that as a pilgrim, I wasn't really trying to get anywhere. And walking with my wife in the hills, we kind of tried to get to the end, kind of. But here was really clearly, there was nowhere to go. So my mantra was, to myself, was, while going nowhere, going somewhere. So the emphasis was not going anywhere. But we were walking, and we were going to this Green Gulch Zen Center. And it was kind of like being on a retreat, where time falls away and there's nothing to have to do or accomplish. Just peaceful, settled, relaxed. Just this moment. It's enough just to be alive. How often in your life would you say, wow, just to be alive is enough? Without a, but, I have my to-do list. I have my responsibilities. I have to do this to become safe. I have to. Just to be alive, just to breathe. And so, in this pilgrimage we took, the approach was that we were not going to a sacred site. Every step was the arriving at a sacred site. And so what we called this, the pilgrimage, was in Pali is Upasamapada, steps of peace. We were just doing steps of peace. This step, we've arrived. This is it. What a great thing. Wow, this step. So it kind of felt that way as we went along. And then there were people who supported us. There were sometimes we had to drive from where we ended up the first day, to where the campground was. So there were people who came and picked us up, kind of phenomenal. And then they drove us back the next day so we could pick up where we left off, because pilgrims can't skip. You know, And then we went through beautiful countryside. You know, some of the really spectacular hikes in the Bay Area that we went through and were in. But the most wonderful, I don't know if the most wonderful one, but one of them was really special. We were got up and left at 6:30 the last morning. And we hiked down Mount Tam into Muir Woods, early in the morning, before most people had gotten there. Muir Woods is considered almost a sacred place. And in fact, some of the groves in Muir Woods are named as religiously. There's like Cathedral Grove, for example. And to be able to, I mean, millions of people go there. But to go early in the morning, I guess it's kind of closed if you drive in, but if you hike in, you can get in. And it's spectacularly beautiful and quiet and peaceful. And we sat there and meditated in the grove and in the woods. And it was so nice to be there. And what enriched it also for me was this whole trip was also some of the challenges. There weren't a lot of challenges, I would say. We were pretty fortunate, the whole thing. But there was this cold wind. But, you know, that especially the first night. And then we had rain. And then not being able to sleep because their pain was pounding on the tent for a while in the middle of the night, midnight. So that's, you know, it's a little bit, you know, you wouldn't want that for yourself. But if you step back, it's kind of desired that a pilgrimage has its challenges. It makes it more real. So that was kind of, you know, small scale challenges. But it was kind of nice that it wasn't just all kind of a nice, simple thing to do. And then it was nice also when we came into, for me, came into Muir Woods, they had these visitor signs, these information signs on there. And one that was most powerful for me was a sign that talked about the history of this piece of land and how it became a park, and the people who preserved it and saved it, and John Muir and different people. Theodore Roosevelt was a player in this, the president. So it had what all the kind of things you expect, you know, all the historical things that made be it here. But now there's a different sensitivity to what it means, what all this means. So they had added notes, like kind of like, by the way. And they talked about all the people who had saved this natural parts of California for parks and to save it for the prosperity in the way they did, were really into eugenics and white supremacy, and that white people were really their superior race, including the president, Theodore Roosevelt, John Muir had some of these qualities in himself as well. And it just felt so, I was so kind of relieved to see this being named. This too is part of it. I don't want to say it's sacred, but this too is part of the profundity of this life we have to deal with and see honestly and clearly. And some of the ways in which we preserve the natural world in the United States has been a form of environmental, economic, and racial injustice to do it, and denying the existence of people who were in the land beforehand, and as if they had no role or they weren't part of it. And so to just be able to walk through the natural world here, the wilderness that's preserved and saved, and somehow ooh and ah and feel that it's sacred, without recognizing the bigger context in which is in, maybe is a kind of partial sacredness, not the full thing. So I was kind of glad that came to the end of our pilgrimage. That also was included. And I thought that was also important. This too. And then we came down to Muir Beach, where the bottom of Muir, the valley there that goes up into the Green Gulch Zen Center, which was originally a farm. And I lived there 40 years ago, almost 45 years ago now, and worked the fields. And it was kind of special for me to go back there and see the fields, see where I'd worked, and imagine Gil as a 45 years ago as a long-haired hippie, working the farm. And then we came to Green Gulch, and the woman, Fu Schrader, who had been the abbess there for the last 9 years, just a month ago stepped down, she received us. And she in the Zendo, in their meditation hall, and we were able to kind of meditate there. And then she gave us a beautiful Dharma talk. So we had a Dharma talk at the beginning, at the end, from these wonderful teachers. And then Green Gulch invited us for lunch. What? And that, this too, you know, this generosity and support for the pilgrims. So we had, there was more, but it felt precious to have a pilgrimage in California. Every country that Buddhism goes to in Asia, eventually there's been pilgrimage sites created. And there's certainly in India, in China, and the ones I know about, and in Japan, there's a really rich background of pilgrimages, routes that go on, and the pilgrimage routes themselves are seen as almost sacred. People have been walking them for over 1,000 years in some places, and 2,000 years. So this sacralizing, is that a word? Sacralizing the geography by the associations it has, and to make part of California, at least for Buddhists, have a kind of sacredness to it, because people have found profundity in stepping on this land and being there and attuning to the environment, their practice to the environment, who they are, to find peace with every step. Steps of peace. And we did it for 3 days. People can do it for months, long trips, long hikes, where you're going is not the point. It's how you step that's the point. So that's nice. But the lesson of this is maybe you're on a pilgrimage every day when you wake up. Maybe every time you go to the market and you walk down the aisles, it's a pilgrimage. Can they be steps of peace? What would it mean? You don't have time for that. That's a silly. You have important products to get into your shopping cart. And you have to look and make sure you get the right one and the right price and also study what other people are getting and judge them and for what they're doing. There's all these important things to do in life and get finished with so you can go do other important things. So sorry about that. You know, so this pilgrimage thing is kind of a headache now. It challenges you, like it makes you question, what are you doing with this life of yours? What are you doing? And why not make every day a pilgrimage? Why not have plenty of time? Why not just make every step a step of peace? Just that question, you might have really good answers to say why it shouldn't be that way. But maybe that's your going into, you know, like I did into the wilderness to question my life when I was 50 and come back with more clarity what I was doing. Maybe you'll come back with clarity and wisdom about why it's really necessary for you to 95% of the time to be in a rush, to get someplace, to do something, go to the next thing. Maybe there's good reasons. Or maybe there's sometimes good reasons. But maybe there's not good reasons to do it as often as you do it. Maybe there's something very profound that you offer the world, not just for yourself. The possibility that just this moment is enough. Here, in this moment, you can find your peace. You can find your well-being. You can find your contentment. And maybe not even for its own sake, but maybe because that's the way you can be attuned to others. That's a way to be attuned to others, so that some of the most deepest ways that we can connect to others with compassion, with love, with kindness, with friendliness, has the best chance to come through. And that was one of the nice things about this pilgrimage. Some of the people I went on I'd never met before. But it was marvelous to do these 12 people together and share this thing together and they kind of have this common bond of humanity and engagement and warmth and friendship and this kind of shared pilgrimage. There was a kind of a depth that happened in the community, I felt, that was really special. Can that be a lesson for all of us who went on the pilgrimage, that actually this is possible even in the supermarket? Imagine if only those other people were paying attention. But you're standing in the line waiting for your turn, and you're there to say hello. You're there to kind of appreciate people. If only they get their you know, face out of the National Enquirer. But then just to live there ready just every moment. A sacred pilgrimage. So thank you. Thank you for being here today, and thank you for just sitting and meditating here, and perhaps this was a pilgrimage, just being here this morning, and I hope that some of the qualities of what I was talking about just exist from coming here for this time we had together. Thank you. And for those of you who want, we can meet out in the parking lot. We'll take the folding chairs and the cabinets there and take one along with you if you can. And then we can sit out there if you want, and there we can take our masks off, all of us, and we can just have a little discussion, questions or discussion about anything you'd like. Thank you.